I'll earn you.
Very well.
Thank you. And you? Very well. I am very pleased to be with you this evening. And so happy to see so many special souls gathered together in your home. With your permission, I will read from Bhagavad Gita. Yasman nod vijite loko, lokan nod vijite chayaha, harsha marsha vayo vegar, mukto yasa chame priyaha. He for whom no one is put into difficulty, and who is not disturbed by anyone, who is equipoised in happiness and distress, fear and anxiety, is very dear to me. In this verse from Sri Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna is describing the natural qualifications of one who has understood and realized his or her own spiritual nature. I will read it again. He for whom no one is put into difficulty and who is not disturbed by anyone, who is equipoised in happiness and distress, fear and anxiety, is very dear to me. The nature of the Absolute Truth is Satchit Ananda, eternal, full of knowledge and full of bliss. Sat means without beginning and without end. Chit means all cognizant, and Ananda means full of unlimited joy. This is the nature of God. Krishna, the very prominent name of the Supreme Absolute Truth, which is given within the Vedic literatures. Krishna explains in Gita, Aham sarvasya prabhavo mata sarvam pravartate, that everything that exists is emanating from that Absolute Truth. And every living being is part and parcel of that truth. Therefore, we are all by nature Satchit Ananda, eternal, full of knowledge and full of bliss. And because this is our nature, this is what every living being is looking for in life. We are looking for an arrangement of happiness that is unending. We are looking for knowledge that can bring about that happiness. Every living entity has this one thing in common: the search for everlasting life, knowledge, and everlasting peace. But the problem arises when we do not understand how to achieve this pursuit of happiness. And unfortunately, the misdirected human civilization of today is creating more and more problems in the pursuit of the solutions to their problems, creating more and more sufferings in the pursuit of happiness, creating more and more disease in the pursuit of good health. Why is this? An intelligent person will naturally reevaluate the very basic premises that our civilization is built on. We are simply, according to the Bhagavad Gita's teachings, we are going in the wrong direction. And what is that? Our basic premise is that we are this material body, and that happiness will be found through getting more and more gratification to this body. However, whatever we give to this body, due to its natural frailties, at any moment, everything can be frustrated. Death could come at any moment. Disease can come at any moment. Failure can come at any moment. Discredit coming from others can come at any moment, and frustrates all our attempts for happiness. So therefore, Bhagavad Gita teaches a simple peace formula. Understand who you are and how to make yourself truly happy. That is actually the basis of every great spiritual system through the history of humanity. In today's society, we have this misconception that money will bring us happiness. Why do we say misconception? Because under the illusion that we are this body, and those things in relationship to this body are mine, we are thinking that the more I have, the more I can enjoy. And money happens to be the medium by which we can obtain more and more and more objects for our personal gratification. And we see within society, due to artificial inflation and expansion of the monetary system, there's so much problems with our economy, and there's so much money. But what is happening to our money? Big, big nations have so much wealth, and they are creating so many scientific, technological facilities for people to improve the quality of their life. But simultaneously, the major portion of money in every one of these big nations is going into defense, which is building massive, massive weapons of destruction. And now that we have built, the big wealthy nations have built these big, massive weapons of destruction, the major part of the money is to try to protect themselves and the civilization that they have created with their money from the weapons that are built to destroy that civilization. Isn't this true? We have created a civilization based on the principle of lots of money, and we have created weapons that are threatening to destroy that very civilization we have created. And now most of the money is to protect ourselves from what we have created. And there's so much anxiety and so much uncertainty and so much fear. This is the extended result of a civilization that is built on the wrong premise. If you say that 1 plus 1 is 3, then every mathematical equation that follows that will simply bring you further and further and further from the truth. So the basic equation of who we are and what the purpose of life is wrong. And therefore the whole civilization, the more scientific research, the more technology, the more education, the more we progress, is only bringing us farther and farther and farther and farther away from what we're all really searching for, longing for fulfillment of our hearts. So Bhagavad Gita is bringing us back to the basic fundamental principle of knowledge, who we are. Are we this body or are we the soul? If we are this body, then why is it that we're always changing from boyhood to youth to old age, the body is going through so many changes. And at the time of death, the body's still there. But somebody's missing. And that's the person. That person who is witnessing life by seeing through the eyes, hearing through the ears, smelling through the nose, tasting through the tongue, thinking through the brain, loving through the heart, that is the soul. That is spiritual by nature and part of God. And it is longing for eternality, knowledge, and pleasure, unending pleasure, unlimited pleasure. And that spiritual quest of the soul is not conditional by any temporary condition of the body. In the Vedic scriptures, there is the story of Prahlad Maharaj. He was just an embryo within the womb of his mother, as far as his body. But hearing from his spiritual master, Narada Muni, who was actually preaching to his mother, he heard that and he became completely self-realized, enlightened soul. So he was not disqualified from transcendental realization because he had the body of an embryo. Because the soul is thirsting for that knowledge, and the soul is actually transcendental beyond this body and is longing for what is beyond this body. But this body is limited. Therefore, Krishna consciousness is that transcendental, natural process of bringing the soul into its own unlimited sphere of enjoyment. It is explained by the acharyas that just as a fish in water is naturally happy, but when a fish is put on the land, the fish cannot find any real, lasting happiness because it is an unnatural environment. So what is our natural environment? Our natural environment is to be united with God. Sanatana Dharma means the constitutional, eternal nature of every soul. And that is to serve. But when we try to serve our senses, or we try to serve the various temporary manifestations of this world, the soul's desires are frustrated. But when we try to serve God and utilize whatever God has created in God's service, then we can experience real happiness. Simply by annihilation of our desires, we will not find real fulfillment. There are philosophers who teach in this way, that this material world is a place where there are endless frustrations, disappointments, dangers. And desire is the cause of all these frustrations. So let us annihilate our desires. But it is explained in the Bhagavad Gita that simply annihilation of the negative does not bring about real happiness. There must be the implementation of the positive. And that positive is loving service to the Supreme. It is explained in the Srimad Bhagavatam that when Krishna was living on this earth, when he was just a small child, one time a fruit vendor was calling out that whoever would like to buy nice fruits, please come and buy them. So Krishna, he, little child at the time, smaller than these children, he was filling his hand with as many grains from his mother's pot. And he came running, but the grains were falling from his hand. And when finally he arrived, there was just a few small grains. And he said, "I would like to purchase your fruits." And the fruit vendor just looked at his beauty, and she just wanted to make him happy. She was not concerned with her own profits. She was not concerned with her own economic condition. She was simply concerned with making this child happy. So she said, "I will give you all my fruits, whatever I have, however many you want." So she filled the little boy's arms with as many fruits as he could hold. And he was very pleased. She had nothing to gain for herself. She just wanted to please this beautiful child. So Krishna took as many fruits as he could hold with his small arms, and he went running back home to enjoy these fruits. And then the fruit seller turned around into her basket, and in place of the few fruits that she had, her basket was overflowing with the most priceless jewels, diamonds and rubies and emeralds and gold and silver. But these were not just material jewels. These jewels represent the jewels of devotion, of love of God, the jewels of the heart. People in this world are decorating their bodies and decorating their homes with so much wealth, but their hearts are like a ghetto. They're dirty, full of all kinds of unclean desires, and lonely, and basically poor, poor-hearted. And real happiness doesn't come from what we put on our body or what we live in. Real happiness is a condition of our heart. If your heart is not happy, you cannot be happy no matter what you cosmetically create around you. And if you're happy within your heart, it really doesn't matter what you have or don't have. You're satisfied. Our Guru Maharaj said one time, if you're happy in Krishna consciousness, if you're sleeping under a tree or sleeping in a palace, you'll be satisfied. Why? Because real happiness is within. We find within this great culture of India and all over the world, there are sages, swamis, renunciates who have nothing. They hardly breathe, they hardly eat, they sleep under trees. I remember when I was a young boy, I came to India, and I used to never sleep indoors. I considered it was Maya, it was an illusion. I considered houses were an illusion. So I always just slept either on riverbanks or under trees. And I'll never forget one time sleeping on bank of Jamuna in Vrindavan in the winter. It was freezing cold, and I never had anything but a cloth chadar and dhoti, sleeping on the ground. And I had a dream that I was back home in America, living in the big beautiful house of my parents in a suburb. And I was thinking, what a terrible thing. Why did I leave the bank of the Jamuna to come to this place? Everyone's just frustrated. It was so peaceful. This was the biggest mistake in my life I ever made. I left that beautiful little tree under the Jamuna on the bank. Sometimes snakes and scorpions would crawl by, but they were friendly. I was thinking, what have I done? Why have I come here? And I was so much in anxiety. And then I woke up, and I still thought I was living in my house in northern Illinois in America. And I was thinking, God, why did I ever leave that place? What am I doing here? What a lonely place this is. What real happiness is here? And as I was saying this, I looked around at the sky and the river and the trees. And I was, I never left. I'm here. And I was thinking, this is wealth. This is wealth. Real wealth is to be happy. If you're not happy, what is the use of everything? In the Bible, Lord Jesus Christ said, what is the use if you gain the whole world if you forget your eternal soul? And Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita that real happiness must come from within your heart. It can never come. Therefore, the physical conditions of this material world, if we utilize them in the pursuit of the real happiness our heart longs for, then they have great value. Otherwise, they really have no value at all. But people have become so infatuated and misdirected to think that physical and mental pleasures will bring them happiness, and higher status within society will bring them satisfaction, and accumulation of more and more and more will bring them peace, that they have missed the point of who they are and what is the reality of their own soul. People are lonely in the world today. People are lonely because the heart is longing to love and be loved. And no material arrangements can actually satisfy the heart's desire for love. Because we all have experienced that love in this world is something we just have to somehow live with. At the beginning, it may seem like something very, this is what I always long for. This will be my greatest goal in life, to achieve this love. If you go to the cinemas, and sometimes there is the lover and the beloved, and there's so many different, it's the common theme. So many different obstacles between them coming together to share their love. And then the good movies, at the very end, they come together. And the bad movies, they both die, or something like that. People spend more money for the bad movies. Years ago, they used to spend money for the good movies that had happy endings. But now, nobody believes happy endings anymore. When movies first started in the 30s and 40s and 50s and to some extent 60s, everyone was believing in a happy ending. So people would pay their hard-earned money to see a man and a woman. They somehow or other meet each other, whether it's in the, it's on a boat amongst the Vikings or whether it's amongst the Eskimos or somehow or other, different parts of the world, different places in history. And then so many obstacles, so many difficulties, so many tragedies, so many heroic feats that have to be performed to get your object of love. And then happily ever after. And everyone was thinking, this is very nice. But then gradually people understood that all this happily ever after when the movie ends, but what happens after that? Everyone knows it doesn't last. So then people nowadays, things end up in disasters. But in any case, we understand that this longing for the perfect object of love and the perfect giver of love is the natural longing of the soul. And where is that come from? It comes from the soul's longing to be reunited with God, with Krishna. Krishna means the all-attractive, the supreme reservoir of all pleasure, the all-beautiful, the possessor of all knowledge, all wealth, all strength, all renunciation, all fame. When we repose our natural affection in the supreme, then we derive supreme affection, supreme pleasure. So somehow or other, when we understand and pursue this goal in life and gain some realization, then we come to this platform that we are reading about today. We become so full in our own spiritual enrichment that the conditions of this world are no longer very important as far as our happiness. We will perform our duties in the service of God, in the service of humanity, in the service of all living beings. But what the result comes about is not affect our own state of consciousness. Bhagavad Gita explains the example that the ocean is so full in itself that whether the rivers flowing into it during the dry season are just trickling, or whether the rivers during the rainy season are just pouring millions and millions of liters of water a second, the ocean is not disturbed because of its own fullness. So similarly, in our life, through our senses, through our mind, through our environment, sometimes success will come and sometimes failure. Sometimes happiness, sometimes distress. Sometimes pleasure and sometimes pain. Sometimes honor and sometimes dishonor. Sometimes health and sometimes disease. Sometimes we're up and sometimes we're down. Sometimes we're famous and sometimes we're discredited by the world. These things happen by arrangements beyond our control. Nobody wants to suffer, but everyone suffers from time to time. So these conditions are beyond our control. And you cannot change that. You cannot change the nature of the world. You cannot change the temporary nature of this body. The only thing really you have the power to change is your perception. It doesn't matter how intelligent you are. It doesn't matter how wealthy you are. It doesn't matter how strong and powerful you are. It doesn't matter how resourceful you are. You cannot change the nature of the environment around us. You can make some cosmetic changes, but essentially, Ariyatmaka, Aridaivaka, and Aribhautaka. That means there will be sufferings of your own body and mind. There will be the sufferings caused by other living beings, and there will be sufferings caused by natural disturbances. If there was an earthquake today, what could we do? If someone in Pakistan pushes the button for the bomb to come to Bombay, what will you do? If the wrong mosquito bites you, what will you do? This world is so much beyond our control. But one thing we do have control over, our consciousness. If we purify our consciousness and actually develop an experienced realization of our eternal self, then we become like the ocean. We become so full with the peace of our own nature in relationship to Krishna or God, then the world, whatever may happen, whether life or death, we understand the eternal treasure, the eternal wealth,
of our own hearts. And that is real wealth, the wealth of the heart. And that is the greatest need within the world today. Because one who finds wealth within his or her own heart naturally wants to distribute that wealth to everyone. Because it is not like the wealth of this world. The wealth of this world, the more you give away, the less you have. If you have 1 crore of rupees and you give away 1 crore of rupees, you have nothing. If you give away 0.5 crore of rupees, you only have half. That is material wealth. But the wealth of the heart, it is based on the spiritual principle, which is eternal, full of knowledge and full of bliss. The more you have, the more you want to give. And the more you give, the more you get. If you give 100% of what you have, Krishna will give you 200%. If you give 500% of what you have, Krishna will give you 1,000%. What does 1,000% mean? Does that have a meaning in this material world? In the spiritual world, mathematics are different. Because Krishna's love is unlimited. So let us, while living within this world and performing our needs and our responsibilities within our society, let us be directing the majority of our attention to acquiring an understanding of the inner wealth of our heart. Invest in that great eternal treasure within us. And how do we do this? This is what Bhagavad Gita teaches. It is a simple process. That whatever we do in this world, we should understand reality. Bhoktaram jagatapasam sarva lokamaheshwaram suhridam sarva bhutanam gyatva mancham timrichtuti. That everything is the property of God. And everything is ultimately meant for the God's enjoyment. And God is the real friend of all living beings. So on a practical level, let us examine the subject of proprietorship. Proprietorship means control. If you own something, no one can take it away from you. So what do we actually own? Ultimately, everything is going to be taken away from us, either in this life or at the time that this body falls in death. Everything is taken away from us. So what actually do we own? Do we own our youth? Time is taking it away. Those who are young think, I have it. But those who are old realize, I lost it. It's going. By the moment, it's being taken away. Our families, our homes, everything will be taken away. And it's all being taken away by the powers of nature. And Krishna says in Gita, Maya Adhyakshena Prakriti Suyate Sacharacharam. He says, I am the controller of nature. So everything ultimately is the property of the Supreme. And therefore, everything should be utilized in harmony with the desire of the Supreme. The Bhagavad Purana explains that when you water the root of a tree, then every part of the tree is nourished. But if you neglect to water the root of the tree, even if you water every other part, the tree will dry up, will not be satisfied. So Krishna is the root of everything that exists. The absolute truth is the root. And by simply utilizing the resources that we have in this world in harmony with the desire of the absolute truth, in the service of the Absolute Truth, then gradually we become supremely satisfied. Human existence is meant to live in harmony with truth. Human existence is not meant to create such a splendid technological, scientific decoration of a conception that is based on an illusion. Science, technology, education are good if it is used in pursuance of the truth. No proper spiritual teacher or scripture is against science, technology, or education, but are against illusion, against ignorance, against using it all for the wrong purpose. To use it to try to find happiness exclusively on the level of the body and the mind is an illusion, because it's ultimately the soul that's either in enjoying or suffering. So to utilize what we have in this world in pursuance of truth, in the service of God, can bring about this transcendental state of consciousness by which we can be equiposed in happiness and distress. We can be satisfied in fear and anxiety. No matter how people try to put us into difficulty, we have to do the needful to deal with them, but they cannot put us in difficulty if we're situated in the realization of our own spiritual nature. So let us pursue this treasure in our lives. By purifying our hearts, we can realize that this treasure already exists within us. When a mirror is covered by dust, you cannot see yourself. The very spiritual, eternal, blissful nature of the soul is within us. But because we are perceiving life through our mind, the soul is seeing itself through the reflection of our mind. And when the mind is dirty, all the soul sees is dirt. When you look in the mirror, to the degree that mirror is pure and clean, you see yourself. Birth after birth after birth, we have been accumulating more and more and more dirt, in the form of misconceptions, worldly attachments, lust and envy and anger and pride and greed and anger. We have just been accumulating these things, and we're thinking they're good. We're thinking they'll make us happy. And we're depositing more and more and more of these anarthas or unwanted dirt. We're just piling it into our hearts and into our minds. And we're mad to try to get more of it. We're engaging in so many activities that have so much bad karma, and we're just accumulating it. And then we look, the soul looks, and all we see is our attachments, our desires, and our misconceptions. So to realize the real eternal treasure of the heart simply means to purify the mind. And how is that? By living a pure life. Living a pure life means not accumulating any more dirt. No illicit sex, no intoxication, no gambling, no meat eating. These are the basic principles of morality. And then we also should cleanse the heart through the divine process recommended within this age of Kali Yuga. In the scripture it is said, Kalera dosa nideh rajan asti heka mahan guna, Kirtanadeva Krishnasya Mukta Sangha Parambrajayat. That this age of Kali Yuga is an ocean of so many bad qualities. But there is one benediction, that anyone and everyone, simply by chanting the holy name of Lord, can purify his heart, cleanse the mirror of the mind, and bring about an awakening of unlimited transcendental happiness in loving Krishna. So it is for this reason that the Vedic literatures so strongly recommend the chanting of this Maha Mantra. Hare Krishna,
Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare.
It is the process by which we cleanse our hearts and bring about an awakening of truth, knowledge, peace, love, and real wealth from within. Thank you very much. Is there any questions anyone like to answer?
Do we have some control over our karma?
Did everyone hear the question? Can you ask again in microphone?
Is everything that happens to us destined to happen, or do we have our own will that wills things to happen in our lives?
Both.
Do we will certain things into both our life?
Both are happening simultaneously. In other words, if you were to jump out this window, after you jump out, do you have a choice of where you will go? Hare Krishna. Please don't jump out. But we have a choice whether we're going to jump out. Everyone can say, don't. Don't jump out. Please don't. You say, no, no, I have my free will. And then you jump. And then as you're falling, you say, well, I don't want to go down. I want to go up. Do you have a choice? So you make your own destiny. But once you make it, then that destiny is beyond your control.
When you make a choice, what lies at the end of that choice is destiny. Is destiny.
Then you have no free will what the reaction will be. You have free will what you will do, but then...
Once the choice is made, then
there's no more free will. Then the laws of nature will act. If I get on an airplane to London, and then halfway in the sky I tell the pilot, I want to go to Delhi, he will say, you got on the wrong airplane. Now you're going to London. So we have a choice. But once we make our choice, then we are obliged by the powers of nature to accept the reaction.
Somebody once told me that even that choice has been predestined.
No. The choice is certainly influenced by the type of consciousness you have created in the past. But still you have, in the human existence, you still have that freedom to choose. Yes?
Yeah, I wanted to ask you, you said accumulating karmas, but how does one know which is the right and the wrong? I mean, what is the judging for that? And which are the good karmas and which are the bad karmas?
This is an important part of education that unfortunately are not told to us in our universities or colleges today. We are being taught all sorts of technological or technical information, but how to use it for the best interest of our life is very much neglected. Therefore, we require a spiritual education. The Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavat, and all the great scriptures of the world, for that matter, are teaching us what is good and what is bad for our best interest in life. There are basically three types of karma. There is karma, akarma, and vikarma. And I will explain. Karma means those activities which are pious, which bring about to the right person, the right thing, in the right place, at the right time, that is good karma. Actually, we can go into much detail to answer your question. The Bhagavad Gita describes there's three modes of material nature: sattva-guna, raja-guna, and tamaguna. Goodness, passion, and ignorance. And every activity can be performed in either goodness, passion, or ignorance. Things that are done in the mode of goodness bring about a very good and pleasant and positive and prosperous result. Things that are done in the mode of passion create more and more anxiety and a development of more and more aggression and kama or desire. And things that are done in the mode of ignorance simply create more and more delusion and pain. So Bhagavad Gita explains you can eat in the mode of goodness, passion, or ignorance. Even charity is calculated in the mode of goodness, passion, or ignorance. So if we're actually acting in the mode of goodness, which is really for the best interest of others on the physical and mental platform, then you get tremendous amount of prosperity and happiness. If you really act in the mode of goodness to a large extent, then you can get happiness beyond this world, in the heavenly worlds, within this material existence. If you cause pain to others, pain will come to you. If you lie, you have to suffer. In this way, there is karma means those good, pious acts that do good for others and will get good results yourself. They're according to the moral standards of religion, karma. Vikarma means activities that are against the moral standards of religion. The result of that will be great suffering. And akarma means that activity that is beyond karma altogether. And that is the service of God, or bhakti. Bhakti means devotional service to the Supreme Lord. Activities that are performed in devotional service are called akarma. That means there's no karma. There's neither pious or impious. It's transcendental. That type of activity brings you beyond this material existence. It awakens the eternal treasure of the wealth of the soul. So Bhagavad Gita is teaching akarma. If you perform the same basic activities in the mode of goodness, but offer the fruits of that in the service of God, it becomes akarma. It is beyond karma. Does that answer your question? Ask again.
Is that not the morals in the religion? I mean, what are they? Do they differ from people to people, to society, to religion?
Yes. But in essence, they are all the same. In essence, moral principles are that as you sow, so shall you reap. If you kill, if you cause harm, if you lie, this is all bad karma. This is immoral in every religion. There's very little difference in the moral principles of religions. But we should not strive for this in life. Human life is meant for something better than just creating a more prosperous situation that's going to cause us ultimate misery anyway. Atato Brahma Jigyasa. Human civilization is meant to understand Brahman, to understand the Absolute Truth, to understand our eternal nature. Why should we live our life simply finding some temporary little pleasures that we know are going to be taken away? Why not utilize that same time to invest in what is eternal, in the real happiness of the soul? And you don't even have to give up your home or your family to do that. Krishna spoke to Arjuna, who was a family man with wife and children. You should take shelter of Krishna's holy name. Yes, whatever you do, things will make you angry in this world. So the solution is to rise above anger, to simply try to avoid the circumstances that create anger is impossible. You can try, but you will not succeed. But by chanting the holy names of the Lord and living in harmony with the will of the Lord in bhakti, we can gradually transcend anger, transcend that frustration. That is the real purpose of our lives. It is impossible to achieve on your own. Without the help of someone who knows the process, we can never do it. Therefore, Krishna says in Gita, Tadvidi pranipatena pariprasnena sevana. If you want to know the truth, you must approach a guru.
I didn't mean that. I meant say you can still achieve it in a family life. It's a little more easy if you're on your own. Yes. Because you can achieve
it. It may or may not be. But there is no need to change your situation. The need is to change your consciousness. Because whatever situation we change, we're always going to find reasons why we cannot do it until we change our consciousness. So better in the situation you are now, just to learn the art of spiritualizing your life. This was Lord Chaitanya's simple teaching to everyone. Whether you are a householder or whether you are a sadhu, no need to make a change. Just take the name of Krishna. Just live in the mood of a servant of Krishna, and your life will become perfect. You can stay at home. You can continue your family. You can continue your occupation. But you can purify your heart through the process. By spiritualizing our family, spiritualizing our occupation, spiritualizing our home, by putting Krishna in the center, rather than our own selfish interests in the center. We are so selfishly centered, and that's the cause of all of our miseries. And the reason why we're selfishly centered is because we want to find happiness. But that very principle in which we're trying to find happiness is the cause of all of our suffering. Real happiness is when you put Krishna in the center. Let me work for Krishna's satisfaction. Let me put Krishna in the center of my family. Let me put Krishna in the center of my home. Then our heart finds real satisfaction.
there any other questions? Work may be satisfying, but is that all there is in life? Without spiritualizing our work, the work only has a limited temporary satisfaction to our mind and to some extent to our body. But how is it satisfying you, the eternal soul? If that work is offered, if it is done as an offering to Krishna, to the Lord, then that same work will satisfy your very soul. Perhaps. The question is the state of consciousness in which you are performing the duty. The highest form of duty is to surrender to Krishna. And if through our work we are surrendering to Krishna, then that is the highest form of duty. If through our work we are simply working for the sake of working, then that is just a karmic activity. It may bring about some temporary stimulation and gratification to our minds, but it is not giving any real satisfaction to the self.
So how does one offer?
The first step is to ask the question that you just asked. And the Krishna consciousness philosophy is dealing with that practical question. We offer the results of our work to Krishna when we make a conscious decision to put Krishna in the center of our lives. It's completely practical. You're working to maintain a house. So whose house is it? Is it your house or is it Krishna's house? Which one? Is it your house or Krishna's house? If it's your house, then first of all, it's not. But if you think it is, then that's karma. Even if you do it as pious as possible, it's just karma. You'll get some good results, and that good results are as temporary as the actions you perform. If you accept that it is God's house, which it is, then you recognize that. You put God in your house. And you live according to God's principles in your house. And then when you're working for your house, you're actually working for Krishna. You're working for food. If your food is being offered to Krishna as bhoga, and then you take the prasad, that means the work you're doing for food is for Krishna. If you're working for your family, if within the family everyone is striving for spiritual perfection by chanting God's name every day, by reading the scriptures, by inviting people to come for katha, like tonight. If the family is actually trying to live by spiritual principles, then working for the family is working for God. So in this way, it's a very practical lifestyle. And if we keep Krishna in the center, then our work is Krishna conscious. Then it actually is the highest duty. But in order to maintain that consciousness, three things are very important, essential. To regularly hear the truth, to associate with devotees who are living by the truth, and to chant the holy names of the Lord regularly. If these three things are regularly practiced within our life, then it becomes very practical to have a conscious understanding and a practical application to that understanding. And then if we are working to support and maintain that, then our work is service to our family and service to God. They become non-different. And that is the highest perfection of work. And we can all do that. So as long as we're working, we don't have to quit our work. We don't have to change our work unless it's a very immoral type of work. As long as we're working, why not adjust our lives in such a way that we can achieve the ultimate perfection and achieve the ultimate treasure, the treasure of the heart, the treasure of bhakti, through that work? It's a matter of our consciousness. In the battlefield of Kurukshetra, do you know the story of Mahabharata? There is Duryodhana and there is Arjuna. They're doing the same work. They're both driving chariots. They're both shooting bows and arrows. They're both making major decisions as far as organizing armies. Duryodhana and Arjuna, their occupation is exactly identical to each other. If you were just to look at them with your eyes, you would say they are doing the same thing. They have the same job. But there was a vast difference. Duryodhana was doing it to satisfy his own greed, for his own prestige. And Arjuna was doing it as a humble, dedicated service to God. He was doing it with love. One was doing it out of greed and the other out of love. One was doing it in knowledge of his spiritual needs and the other was doing it in ignorance of his spiritual needs. And they both got two very, very different results. So it is not only the external, superficial act of what we're doing it, but the conscious in which we do it. And the perfection of our consciousness is to show love for the body, mind, and soul. If you actually love your family, you will do something for their souls. Doing something for their body and mind is your duty. You cannot neglect that. That would be irresponsible. But the first duty is for the soul. Because ultimately, the one we love is a soul. To serve the soul of another by helping that soul come closer to God is the perfection of work.
What if they don't accept it?
Our question is, what if they don't accept it? You're asking so many nice questions tonight. If they don't accept it, you should try your best anyway, and Krishna will be pleased. Krishna says you should not be attached to the fruits of your actions, but you should perform your duty in a spirit of devotion. This is the teaching of Gita. So whether they accept or not is the fruits of your action. But the fact that you're doing it earnestly and honestly in a spirit of devotion is what will make your life perfect. So the perfection of our life is simply to try our best in a spirit of devotion, to do what we do in knowledge. And whether people accept or reject, that may be beyond our control. But we should do our part.
Is it wrong to fulfill one's desires?
It depends which desires.
It's bad to fulfill the bad, and it's good to fulfill the good. However, the real desire of you, the soul, is to love God and to serve God and to experience ecstasy. So that is the best. That is the goal of life.
You may know what is good, but you lack determination to do the good. Now, how do you build the determination?
Thank you for this nice question. By associating with people who have determination. This will help us tremendously. We need support. We need help. At our weakest moment, if someone who's strong and who really cares about us, they can give us strength. Is that true? So similarly, spiritually, we may be very weak. And that weakness comes in the form of less determination. However, if we associate with people who have strength and who have compassion and who are willing to give us strength and determination, then we can overcome all obstacles. Some people say that when you come into a spiritual society, you are accepting a crutch. You have heard? We have been criticized. I want to walk on my own 2 feet. I don't want to walk with a crutch. But the fact is, if you're lame, why not take the crutch? You need a crutch. Everyone in this world is spiritually lame. We all need help. We all need the support. And the society of devotees, the society of spiritually minded people can give us that strength through their wisdom, through their prayers. They can help us overcome all obstacles. You become what you associate with. When we associate with people who have determination, we become determined. Our spiritual master, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, he had such determination. He was 70 years old when he came to America on a cargo ship across the Atlantic Ocean. He had no money and no one to help him, but he had tremendous determination. Unlimited determination to give love of God, to give Krishna bhakti to others. In the Western world, where not a single person ever even heard the name Krishna, where people were addicted to illicit sex, intoxication, gambling, and meat eating, even in the name of religion. And he just took people off the street who had no spiritual inclinations. And just by associating with them, they had such determination, they could overcome all obstacles. They could start incredible, wonderful temples, distribute millions of books of Bhagavad Gita, preach and bring thousands and thousands and thousands of people to Krishna consciousness. Where did these people get their determination from? Just by associating with one person who is determined. It is contagious. So it's very, therefore the Shastras explain, most important principle in spiritual life is associating with saintly persons. Everything is possible if we keep that association. Should we have a few minutes of kirtan?
before Prasad? Please, thank you. I would like to thank all of you very much for tolerating me for so long time. We would like to teach you the process that Lord Chaitanya taught us how to chant in. Would you like to learn the process of dancing in kirtan as a meditation? I will teach you. As I'm chanting, everyone put your hands together like this. In India we say namaskar, which means I bow down to you. It is the process of welcoming a respectable person. And Krishna has appeared within his name. There are many names of God, and in all of these names, God has presented himself. God, with all of his mercy and all of his opulences, is within the name of God. So as I am chanting and you are hearing attentively, with folded palms, welcome Krishna into your heart. And as you are chanting, raise your arms like this. Everyone, please. This is an expression of offering your life at the feet of the Lord. Just as Draupadi, when she was being stripped of her sari, she lifted her arms and cried out Krishna's holy names. Raising your arms means, my Lord, I am yours. Reaching out for the mercy of the Lord in our life. And as you are doing, please chant very loudly. And everyone can stand up.